With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode of the Cult Popture Podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credits scene at the end of each episode, or join us for our monthly movie club Zoom call where we discuss a film together, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopture.
You're excited, I can see it. I can see it in your eyes.
I am. And do you know how you can see these eyes so clearly is through my glasses.
I technically said it before you said it, meaning I did notice.
Because these glasses, I, as you can see, I'm wearing, I don't need to describe them, but you can see them. These glasses that I'm wearing, I haven't worn for a while. You might remember I wore them a wee bit while I was down in Christchurch last time. And then I lost them for like... When was that? Like 2 months ago, almost? I lost them for like 2 months. And then I found them. Well, Jess found them, actually, I should say. They were in the bathroom. And so now I've started wearing them again because I couldn't find them anywhere. I've been wearing my other ones.
Yeah. I bought 2 new pairs of glasses about 3 years ago.
And red and blue.
A blue pair. And
I said it first, so technically I did know.
An identical red pair that I was going to wear for fancy occasions, but I went to so few fancy occasions that I ended up losing my red pair. I couldn't find them anywhere, and I was so upset with myself because what kind of loser, Richard, loses their glasses? I was like, this is an ominous sign of like the state of my bedroom that I can't find a pair of glasses. Yeah. I think I did find them again. But it's getting to the point where I feel like I need to get new glasses again. Right. And it's like, I've barely worn the red ones. What a waste of money.
You may not go to many fancy events, but I guess because you go to so few, like all the photos that you take of yourself are usually wearing the red glasses. Because it's like, well, I'm going to a fancy event, better take a photo, and then that becomes your profile picture. So I feel like I'm so used to seeing you in those, ones, yeah.
Right, that makes sense. It's like a Bart Simpson orange shirt versus blue shirt situation.
Yeah.
All right, well, hello everybody. My name is AJ, and over there is Richard. We're here talking about glasses, and Richard, we're going to talk about lost glasses a little bit later on in the show as well. But this is Film Franchise Fortnights on the Cold Popture Podcast. This is usually a podcast where every fortnight we cover a different film franchise, but in one of our many... rapidly increasing versions of this type of show, we're doing part 2 of a 4-week series, which means it's not Film Franchise Fortnights, it's Film Franchise Week for 4 weeks. A month, if you will.
Yeah, Film Franchise Month.
And that franchise, the reason we're doing it week to week is because that franchise is The Mummy. Now...
I know what you're thinking. Oh.
We are not quite yet up to the Brendan Fraser Mummy movies. We started last week by redoing a franchise that we did in the first year of the podcast, which was the Universal Mummy movies. And next week we're going to do the Brendan Fraser Mummy series. But this week we are talking, of course, about the Hammer Mummy movies, or... the 4 films released from the late 50s and to the early 70s that have been categorized as the Hammer series, aka films about the mummy that were produced by Hammer Film Productions, a British company who for many years copied Universal horror movies like Frankenstein and Dracula, getting away with it by adhering closer to the public domain source material than the American cinematic versions. And in the case of Dracula, which also starred Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee as the Mummy movies did. They kind of usurped Universal in creating the definitive pop culture image. Fuck off.
Oh, what a callback.
It's all worth it. Everyone who's listened from the start of the show.
My point is that
The Christopher Lee version of Dracula is the version that had fangs, had red eyes, and like kind of a sexual vibe. Seemed like a guy who fucked. And that's sort of what we think of as Dracula today, you know? And and it's funny that the what is ostensibly the British remake of the American
I do want to before we get too far into this, I just want to check, are we going to do like a stop Hammer Time joke at any point in this podcast? Or
the idea of doing any Hammer related pun did not even occur to me, because I detest pun humor so much that only now that you're saying it am I consciously realizing that Hammer is a word outside of the name of this film production.
But is saying stop Hammer Time a pun?
I guess it's not. If like these movies were called the Slammer movies and you were like, stop Slammer Time, that'd be a pun.
What the fuck?
But this is just, it is literally Hammer Time that we're doing these. Yeah, and we're doing the Mummy exactly, week two, right? Stop Hammer Time. Yeah, it's just a cute reference. I'll give you that.
Well, okay, a pun is a joke exploiting the different possible meanings of a word, or the fact that there are words which sound alike but have different meanings. So I guess...
So I Want My Mummy would be a pun.
Yeah, yeah, but... Which would be a good name for a mummy-based podcast.
I Want My Hammer. Not really a turn of phrase, but technically still a pun.
Yeah, but like, yeah, Hammer, stop Hammer Time probably is a pun by definition, because you're using the definition like MC Hammer plus, you know, the
well, Hammer in the production company refers to a surname as well.
Right, yes. No, so I would comfortably say that that's
would
a pun.
Be
a,
it
think,
would
yeah.
be a pun. Yeah, but that being said, Stop Hammer Time would be a good name for a podcast that covers Hammer horror movies.
Yeah, sure.
There you go. We got there. All right. By the late 50s, Universal was the American distributor of Hammer horror movies. So a deal was made where Hammer could take their pick from Universal's back catalogue, and they chose The Mummy, taking the name of the 1932 original film we watched last week, but making a film called The Mummy, but remaking the four Caris-based sequels from the Universal series into one movie, which, Richard, is actually almost what I pitched for my Continue the Franchise at the end of last week's episode. I said, take the four Caris movies and turn them into one better movie, but I was saying, take the existing footage and edit
it. Right, yeah, that's interesting. I completely forgot that was your Continue the Franchise, because when I immediately deleted all knowledge of The Mummy from my mind...
From your brain?
Yeah, I also took with it the my knowledge of the podcast.
Oh, that's tragic. The success of the Hammer Mummy movie in 1959.
Sorry, the Hammer what movie?
Hammer Mummy movie.
I've never heard that word.
It led to what could be regarded as sequels, but are really, really, Richard, just three other movies about mummies. They're not really sequels. These include The Curse of the Mummy's Tomb in 1964, The Mummy's Shroud in 1967, and Blood from the Mummy's Tomb in 1971. Maybe the most enigmatic title of the whole mummy mega franchise, Blood from the Mummy's Tomb. Blood from the Mummy's
War
Tomb.
From the Planet of the Apes.
So, the first film, The Mummy, 1959. This was directed by Terence Fisher. Do you know what it has on Rotten Tomatoes?
No clue.
It's got 89% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Fuck that.
What is this movie about?
So, people are searching for the Tomb of Anunka. Just before they enter, this Egyptian warns them not to go in or they'll fucking die.
Yeah.
They ignore him and they find the mummy. And then, of course, one of them finds the Scroll of Life. The others leave and then come back. And the guy who found the scroll is like catatonic. Cut to 3 years later. The catatonic dude awakes from his comatose state. And he recounts what happens and reveals he accidentally brought Karis back to life blah, blah, buried alive, blah, blah, loved the princess. Then, I don't know, mummy killing rampage, person who resembles the princess, etc., etc. And then the film ends when the mummy sinks into a quagmire with the scroll of life.
Yep. So the main character in this film is actually the son of the guy who went crazy from discovering the tomb. And that son is played by Peter Cushing of Star Wars. He played Tarkin in Star Wars, in the first Star Wars movie.
And in not Rogue only One. Is
it was well, sort did of he? No, it's not only very strange to see Peter Cushing in anything other than Star Wars, even though clearly he was like the face of Hammer horror movies, because him and Christopher Lee played the hero and the monster in Frankenstein and Dracula, as well as the mummy. But it's even weirder to see a movie where a man who I see as ancient plays someone's son.
Yeah,
like that's really bizarre.
Yeah. And also like a man who just looks so evil.
Yes, like, playing the hero, playing the good guy. Christopher Lee looks more good than Peter Cushing. What did you think of this movie, man?
I didn't like it.
No. When will it end? When will this grudge you've got?
I doubt it will end.
Do you have any? Do you want to elaborate on not liking it at all?
So the kind of the big bad of the film is this mummy, and I was like, I've seen this before. Don't like this. Well, and that was kind of my take on it. I don't. I don't know. No, I prefer the design of the mummy in this franchise, but that's more of like the whole franchise thing, or this, you know, the Hammer series. And I don't know. It was nice seeing it in color. What do you want me to say? it's the same movie.
I thought it was an immediate step up from what we've seen.
Yeah, it was like
this, and it felt
AJ, I hated this film, but it was a big step up.
There were moments which I think would have genuinely scared audiences in 1959. I thought the acting was pretty good. I thought the story was pretty solid. It is something we've seen roughly six times already, but I get it.
Never in color.
But it is in color and has Christopher Lee, who's a good time.
Yeah, Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing did elevate the movie. Definitely. It's similar kind of thing, like, because Peter Cushing, it's like in this, like you said, like you're like, that guy's fucking ancient, but Christopher Lee is like, oh my god, like he's so young, looks like a little boy.
Well, you only see him in human form when he's doing, would it be blackface, wouldn't it? It like a flashback to ancient Egypt,
when a flash black,
if you will.
Sorry, I know we're not doing puns.
For most of the movie, he's completely covered in bandages, as you can imagine, I'm sure, if you've ever seen him. this film is set in 1895, making it the earliest set mummy movie we've seen yet. It takes place 27 years before the discovery of King Tut's tomb, and I thought that was interesting.
Wow.
When the first scene happens and then it cuts to Britain 1895, and I was like, so is this a flashback? What's going on?
A lot of it takes place 3 years after that.
Sorry, 1895 is the 3 years after it, I think.
Not according to Wikipedia.
What are you doing on Wikipedia? Get off of that.
Well, how am I supposed to know what the films are about?
I certainly didn't watch them. No, you're right. Yep.
Yeah, because I tried to find out like when when did people know about mummies? You know, when did modern culture first hear of the tale of the mummy? Because yeah, like we know when King Tut's tits. Listen here, tits.
I'll let you make fun of yourself for that one.
When King Tut, you don't need when me. Tutankhamun's tomb was found, which is one of those things. It's like I might have said this before already, but like I feel like I used to see that, like the face on King Tutankhamun's thing. I feel like I used to see that all the time. And yeah, I haven't seen it in like a decade. but like it's such a like primary school thing. I remember I made this real fucking cool like painting of it, which was like the paint was like mixed with sand, and it was like this really cool textured painting. What do I happen to that?
I feel like in the same way there are horse girls and car boys, there are ancient Egypt
Tutankhamun boys.
like my brother was obsessed with ancient Egypt. I have multiple friends who, when they were younger, were obsessed with ancient Egypt. I kind of never quite got on the train, but I've always passively interested. Were you an Egypt kid?
No, I'm trying to think of what. Nah, what? I mean, I guess, because like Yu-Gi-Oh is like related to ancient Egypt, I was into that, so. I guess tangentially.
Maybe that's why my brother liked Yu-Gi-Oh so much. But do you know what? You recognize that that's absolutely like an archetype of kid, right? Like the ancient Egypt kid?
No.
You don't really? You didn't know any ancient Egypt kid?
I disagree.
You disagree that you didn't know any ancient Egypt kids?
You heard me.
What do you think the reception was to this film?
Good.
Well, despite it having 89% on Rotten Tomatoes, it seems that people just don't like The Mummy. Like, we learned this last week that,
like this
everyone's
is insane.
Like, this is the worst universal horror monster. All contemporary reviews for this movie are like, oh, it's fine, but it's no Dracula. It's no Frankenstein.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because this was like a hard-fought campaign to get us to do these films.
because, do you know what's funny? There are 19 films people fought for us to watch. It's because they're like one of them. It's because one of those movies, a lot of people, including myself, not including you, really like. And about a couple of months ago, people were just, you know, talking in our Discord on what should be the next franchise. There was a vote going on our Patreon, patreon.com/cultpopshow. If you want to get involved for as little as $1 a month, you could make it happen too. One of the like leading options was written on Patreon by someone as like Brendan Fraser mummy movies. And people are like, oh, should we vote for this or vote for Planet of the Apes? This conversation's happening across days, and I don't say anything because it doesn't look like The Mummy's going to win. But then it starts rising up the ranks, and I go into the Discord, Richard, and I say, we can't just do the Brendan Fraser Mummy movies. As much as I love those movies, or at least one of them, at least two of them, as much as I love at least two of them, since when have we just done one iteration of a franchise? I'll tell you since when, since we last did The Mummy, okay? And I was so angry that people were voting for this when it's like, the podcast, it lives and dies, it literally lives and dies by having to do everything, by comprehensive coverage, you know, for better or for worse. Yeah. And in this case, probably for worse. And
The Mummy hadn't won the Redux, and we were doing Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, we would have done it by now. Imagine a world where we've done Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants again instead of The Mummy. What would happen then if people were like, oh, I want The Mummy after that?
I wouldn't allow it.
I would just say that we could get away with just doing the Hammer, Fraser, and Scorpion King.
Yeah.
Because we've already... It's like, hey, yeah, we did Universal already. But it was because it happened so close to when Redux was happening anyway that we had to do this. But yeah, I mean, I think we should have just done this.
you, when I wrote all this out in the Discord, you responded with a GIF of Falcon from Falcon and the Winter Soldier saying he's out of line, but he's right. And I thought that was really funny and very, very in line with our Abbott and Costello dynamic, Richard, where like what you said was technically supportive of me in a way that I was very grateful for, but also acknowledged that you yourself did not want to redo the Mummy movies. So I've got a piece of dumb IMDb trivia. Maybe I have three pieces of dumb IMDb trivia for The Mummy.
Thank
1959,
God.
Racing through these movies even quicker than we'd race through.
Let's do it in under an hour.
Let's do it. The Hammer Films had already done remakes of The Curse of Frankenstein, 1957, and Dracula, 1958. This was the first film made after Hammer reached an official agreement with Universal Pictures, then Universal International, allowing them to do remakes of the classic horror films. In this film, for example, the agreement with Universal International allowed them to use the name Carice. And it's like, yeah, it's a fucking remake. Just list one example. Like, yeah, that is one example. I could list 50 other examples. There's the next piece. This film has 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes based off 8 critic reviews. Well, it now has 9 critic reviews and is at 89%. So you're dumb, IMDb. And lastly, body count, 5. Then in parentheses, excluding the flashback where dozens are killed during Anunka's burial. I just think that should count towards the body count.
Yeah.
Excluding.
The Muppets one. Kermit's the only one who appears from the Muppet Show, unless you count the other characters that appear from the Muppet Show. It's like, I absolutely do count those.
Yeah, what do you mean? Of course I count them. All right, any stray loose thoughts on The Mummy 1959?
No, I'm just trying to find what the last episode of Film Franchise Fortnight's under 1 hour was.
I don't think we're going to be able to do it.
What? Not with that attitude.
I like that this is a race, and I like that by clarifying that I like it, I am shortening the amount of time we have to do even more. I think that's fun.
What would you guess is the last one under an hour?
The Cinderella Story.
No. What's an episode that you would have wanted to be over as quick as possible?
Yu-Gi-Oh? No, that went for ages.
RoboCop.
Okay. Is that under an hour?
RoboCop's 54 minutes and 28 seconds, August 19th, 2019.
Wow. That's over a year and a half ago, is it? The Mummy's Tomb, The Curse of the Mummy's Tomb. I beg your pardon, Richard. The Curse of the Mummy's Tomb. We watched The Mummy's Tomb last week. It was one of them. I couldn't tell you which one. I know it wasn't the first, second, or sixth one, but it could have been the third, fourth, or fifth. I don't know. The Curse of the Mummy's Tomb came out in 1964. This was directed by Michael Carreras. And it's not the last time we'll see that name in this podcast. What do you think this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
Don't care.
Neither does critics. Doesn't have a score. This has a 30% audience score for what it's worth. What is this movie about?
So Ra and Tef, the mummy, mm-hmm. is found. Mm. The artifacts are brought back to London. They want to put it on display, but shock horror, the mummy comes to life, etc., etc.
this is a literal B movie. Like, it's literally a B movie.
About a bee.
No, I mean that it's the...
It's a bee movie!
It's about a bee! It was the second half of a double feature. This film supported the slightly more prestigious film, The Gorgon. Do you know what a Gorgon is?
Medusa's a Gorgon.
Correct. What did you think of The Curse of the Mummy's Tomb?
Wasn't a fan.
What? Unbelievable. Richard, we have never once covered a movie on this podcast that
I didn't like.
That I have struggled to even visualize more than this one. There have been movies where I didn't understand. Like, a classic example I always go back to is A Fistful of Dollars.
A heist movie.
Or any given heist movie we've covered. A Fistful of Dollars, I remember, was a movie that we watched and we were both like, fuck, I have no idea what's happening in this movie.
Yeah. But God, that was satisfying seeing the reviews that are like, yeah, this one's not very good. It's pretty confusing. So I was like, are we just fucking stupid?
even I feel like the Godzilla movies that we covered were more defined, like distinguishable than this.
Yeah, exactly, because Godzilla is like, okay, what is the monster look like that he fights in this one? Yeah.
This one, I think they're on a boat at one point, which made me think there should be a mummy movie where they're on a boat, and that could have been my Continue
mummy
the Franchise.
Mummy Takes Manhattan.
But it's not my Continue the Franchise anymore. The Mummy's Boat. Because, like, wasn't Tutankhamun on Titanic or something? There was a mummy, an undead mummy on Titanic. Yeah. And
an undead mummy.
There was a dead mummy. There was a dead mummy on Titanic, and when it sank, the death toll was like included the already dead body that was aboard the ship. And this is like a fun little trivia, piece of dumb IMDb trivia from real life. It's that they counted the already dead body as one of the dead in Titanic. Maybe this is an urban legend. But anyway,
I think it might be. Yeah.
The point is that there's a relationship between cruise ships and mummies that I would like to exploit, but not in this episode and probably not ever. I'm beginning to see that this is what I've written an hour ago and don't remember what I'm talking about. I think I'm beginning to see that the better mummy movies are defined by their interesting characters, especially because...
By starring Brendan Fraser.
Yeah. Because the mummy is such an inherently boring character for so much of these, so many of these movies, even when Christopher Lee plays him or Boris Karloff.
Well, yeah, because you think like, oh, okay, yeah, what, you're silent killer, and then it's like, well, you guys liked Freddy vs. Jason Voorhees, you guys like Michael Myers, and it's like, at least they get creative. Like, to be fair, okay, we get some creative kills in the next film,
evidenced by the fact you even remember that we have creative kills in the next film.
Don't remember what they are, but yeah, like the fact that they. Yeah, like they're still exciting, and even just the fact that it's like, I don't know, maybe it's like they're not trying as hard to be real films. Mm. Like, it feels like these are like trying to be prestigious horror, you know? They're trying to have a message and a plot, and it's like, no, don't make me care about the characters. I'm not going to. Mm. Just give me some memorable kills. That's what that's, and maybe that's something that up until Halloween in 1978 wasn't actually. Really, because that's like the first, like, I mean, there was can't remember what's the name of the like, there's the one, that film that's considered the first slasher film, but
I don't remember
Halloween
what it is
a very early one.
But
Halloween was not long after it, and that was kind of like, yeah, whereas like these haven't quite worked out what makes a slasher film work yet.
I liked that this one has like a morally corrupt figure at the center of it. There's a guy named Alexander King who's like, he's found the mummy and he wants to, he's like Dunham in, or Denim in King Kong. Like, he wants to show off the mummy that he's found.
Show off his jeans.
Yeah, he's like this greedy, because he's Denim. He wants to show off because it's a pun. He's a greedy showman trying to make money. It's a tale as old as time. He gets killed by the mummy. And I feel like characters like that really sing in movies like this, where it's like, he's like, evil, but he's got a personality. Like,
yeah, and then also, like, yeah, you love to see characters like that get their comeuppance as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, it's that kind of like when the slasher movie, or the formula for this kind of movie was worked out, it's that, yeah, like it's like Killing the Cat kind of moments where it's like, let's just do, you know, obviously like cartoonishly reprehensible things, and then they get what's coming to them, and sometimes that's just having sex, you know, having premarital sex or doing drugs, and it's like, yeah, you get those
cartoonishly reprehensible.
Yeah.
That's why I've never done it. The ending of this film is real weird. It takes place in a sewer. And the building just collapses on the mummy after he's kidnapped the woman that resembles the princess that he was in love with. The villain of the film is this guy who's like kind of like this other... Everyone in these films is British, and it makes it very hard to figure out who the good guys are because I'm so...
There's one villain that talks like...
And then a real snidely character that talks like this. No, it's just I'm used to seeing horror movies where if someone's got a British accent, they're probably the bad guy. Or like, you know, like Star Wars and stuff like that. Not that they're horror movies, but the villain in this is a very upper class British person who's like constantly clearly like undermining them and trying to like steal whatever it, like he's, it's unclear what his motives are, but you know they're not good. At the end, it's revealed that he's been alive for like 4,000 years, and he was there when the mummy living through 2020. when the mummy
watching these movies,
when the mummy was a person, wasn't a mummy, and when they got mummified, they were there. And so he's been alive for 4,000 years. I've written here too well adjusted.
This is a Janet Van Dyne situation.
Yeah, you're alive for 4,000 years. You're telling me you're a very dapper Englishman.
Like, you keep up with meme culture. Like,
It also follows that all too familiar template that you mentioned before, Richard, and I also mentioned, of falling in love with the reincarnation. Something that, it's one of those things, I didn't know this was what The Mummy is about until rewatching and watching these new ones.
Is that in the Brendan Fraser ones?
Yes, absolutely. But because those are the first ones I saw, it was like, oh, this is new. And now I'm going back and being like, oh, so the basic structure of a mummy movie is not just there's a mummy. The puzzle piece is also that they need someone that they're in love with because yada, yada, yada. But the problem with this movie is it takes so long to get to that point that by the time he's kidnapped the girl and they're going into the sewers, it's like, fuck, it's taking ages. But then at the same time, such a degree of nothingness happens in this movie, Richard, that as the credits rolled, I checked the stream I was watching it on because I was like, was this really an hour 20? It felt like I've been sitting here for like an hour. And which
4,000 years.
Which it's weird because usually these movies, you go like, it's only an hour long, but it felt like I was there for 100 years, 4,000 years. But in this case, it was like so little happens that I was like, did I really just watch an hour 20 minute movie? Because it doesn't feel like I did.
Yeah. And it's still that, also that thing of the credits just start rolling and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Even in 1964, we're still checking the time to see there's 4 seconds left. The title was misspelled on the Blu-ray spine. When this was released on Blu-ray, it was on the spine. It's called Curious of the Mummy's Tomb. C-U-R-E-S-E. Curious of the Mummy's Tomb. Very funny. According to IMDb, Richard, for the Australian release poster, the painting of Jean Roland was altered so that she appeared heavily gagged rather than screaming, which I think, by any measure, is worse than screaming. And what upside down rating system does the ratings, like the people go like, screaming's a little bit inappropriate. Let's put a gag in her mouth, and that'll make
like,
it better.
Like when you say heavily gagged, is it like, like a ball gag in her mouth?
Do you know,
like,
I didn't even look it up. I just thought that's a funny thing to say.
Oh yeah, I found her screaming, but what did you say? What's
Australian release.
Curse of the Mummy's Tomb. Australian. Oh god, this is horrific.
What happened?
Okay, right. Yeah, I actually found it. If you want, I'll send it to you.
Okay.
It's like a bandage around her mouth kind of thing. It looks like she's bloody straight out of 2020. it's wearing a mask. It's not as bad as I thought it would be, to be honest.
Okay, no, fair enough.
There you go. It's more like a bandana. Oh, it looks my like she's god, is a train
that,
robbery.
That the cover, that looks like shit.
Yeah.
What an awful poster for this movie.
Yeah.
It looks like a cartoon.
What is a cartoon?
But the movie isn't. All right. Do you have any other stray thoughts on The Curse of the Mummy's Tomb? We're going to keep going. Keep the train going.
Do you think I do?
No. The Mummy's Shroud, 1967.
What an insane title.
The Mummy's Shroud.
Yeah.
Explain.
Shroud?
What? A shroud's a thing.
How many, like, why is shroud a...
It's like an ancient Egyptian cloth. I think shroud is appropriate.
Yeah, but it's like, why is the word shroud in the title of the film?
I think it's cool. This is directed by John Gilling, a name I recognized before looking up to discover I didn't recognize it. What do you think this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
I'm guessing it doesn't have one.
None have one. It has a 19% audience score. What is this movie about?
Alrighty. Set in 1920, but then it flashes back to ancient Egypt. A little boy, Pharaoh, is killed and buried. Then in 1920, they find the tomb, and of course, there's a curse. There's a curse, of course. They get bad luck for desecrating the body. The mummy's revived.
But kills
are more interesting. I'll give it that.
Importantly, though, as well, the mummy is not the little pharaoh boy. It's the servant. They find they find the little Pharaoh boy's mummy, but it's actually the mummy of the servant who protected him in his dying days that comes to life and is attacking people because the shroud that covered the little Pharaoh was disrupted, and so that brings him to life and to get revenge.
And then, yeah, like I said, the kills are more interesting in this one, but then yeah, obviously they destroy the mummy at the end of it. Yeah, can you remember the kills?
He throws a guy out a window. He throws like sulfuric acid on a guy.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
It's very, very slasher-esque, really.
Yeah, and so this is why I think I kind of enjoyed this one more. Mm. I hated it.
Oh.
But yeah.
Yeah. Well, so this was a B movie as well for a film called Frankenstein Created Woman. And I have to say, you may have hated it, but I think this is the best one we've seen for Film Franchise Fortnite so far out of the ones we've watched. It felt like there were genuine pieces of filmmaking being employed. There's a particularly like lavish musical score that really like accentuated some really cool moments, like very like the ancient Egyptian moments of this like swelling orchestral score that I really liked. I thought it was an interesting new motivation for the mummy that it's someone protecting, it's like a servant of another pharaoh protecting the child pharaoh. Is, you know, it's not the
looking for a beloved, long lost reincarnated
and it's
something
lady.
Like that I would maybe want to see in a, like, you know, a new version as well. Is that like, yeah, it's a more interesting motivation, like, yeah, like exploring different types of love, I guess,
rather than
just like romantic love, that it's like, I think that's more interesting.
Yeah. There's also another greedy capitalist character who serves as sort of the true villain of the film.
The Jeff Bezos of the film, if you will.
I thought there was also some genuinely spooky moments. But that being said, this is the worst looking mummy. It looks like someone wrapped in bandages with a face
like
drawn on
them.
And I thought the ending was a bit of a letdown because it's just sort of they toss the magical item, which might be the shroud. I can't remember. And they have to basically recite like a curse they've known since the start of the film while holding the object, and that destroys the mummy. And there's a really cool moment where it like crumples to dust and you see it's like skull and it's done. Just look up death of the mummy and the mummy shroud. It's very cool. There's the feeble manservant to the capitalist bad guy in this has a pretty interesting and scary death where he's like this sniveling Smithers type of character. And he breaks his glasses that he's been wearing the whole film. And he's like, I can't see anything. And then the mummy appears to him as like this amorphous blob in front of him. So he can't tell it's the mummy before it throws him out the window. And it's kind of clumsy, but it's interesting because this is achieved to a much spookier effect in the 1999 mummy. The same character loses their glasses, sees a shape in a blurry shape that ends up being the mummy. And I thought that was interesting because it's another case like we had with the Planet of the Apes where a reboot is borrowing something from one of the more obscure corners of the...
Like The Simpsons. How Rise of the Apes borrowed from... Stop the Planet of the Apes, I want to get
that's up. Exactly what I was talking about. Okay, a guy named Eddie Powell played the mummy in this, and he was Christopher Lee's stuntman on Dracula. What do you think of that, Richard?
I don't know. Is that supposed to be dumb IMDb trivia?
No, I didn't say it was dumb.
I know, but I'm like, well, it's. I don't think it's good enough to warrant being legitimate IMDb trivia, but okay.
You don't think that'd be a good piece of IMDb trivia?
No, I mean, it is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, okay. Cool. Good then.
I could be wrong, but I think this is the first time the mummy kills people in other ways than strangling.
I think so. There's a lot of off-screen strangulations that, you know, might be other things. But
yeah. And it's crazy to me that it took until 1999 to figure out that the way the mummy kills you should be supernatural in nature. Like, that feels so obvious, obviously, because that's scarier. You can strangle someone in real life.
I have.
You can throw someone out a window. It's scarier if the thing they do is supernatural. And that's just
when
my opinion.
When I said... I haven't. I wasn't saying I haven't thrown someone out a window. I was correcting myself from earlier saying I haven't strangled someone.
Right.
I also haven't thrown someone out the window.
Thank you. Blood from the Mummy's Tomb, Richard. It came out in 1971. It was directed mostly by a guy named Seth Holt and unofficially by a guy named Michael Carreras. Who we've seen before. Yes, you're right. He directed The Curse of the Mummy's Tomb. What do you think this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
I'm guessing it doesn't have one. It
doesn't have one, but it does have a 34% audience score. What is this movie about?
So the tomb of an ancient Egyptian queen is found. The guy that finds the tomb, his daughter, looks exactly like the queen. And then there's like, yeah, they need to collect all these relics. And each time you like get a relic or give up a relic, you die. The mummy wakes up and kills the main guy, but then the girl, the daughter, stabs her, and then the house collapses on both of them. And then at the end, because these two women look identical, played by the same actress, someone is rescued, and the someone wakes up in hospital covered in bandages, but you don't know who it is.
I thought this was a 1 out of 10 movie with a 10 out of 10 ending. To have a mummy movie that ends with and this is the first one where the mummy isn't an undead, they're not wrapped in bandages, and then end it with someone that could be one of two characters wrapped in bandages at a hospital looking into a camera. I was like, that's fucking brilliant. Like, that's amazing.
This is my favorite one so far.
I did not like almost anything else about it. I thought it was boring. I thought I liked that it begins with this prologue that's almost like Lynchian. It feels like a dream sequence from a Twin Peaks movie where like a hand gets cut off and it like creeps across the desert. And it's like very scary and unclear what's going on. But everything else about it I just thought was so boring.
I want to clarify one thing.
Yep.
I agree.
Mm.
Hated this movie.
Right.
It's my favorite one.
Okay. This was a B movie for Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde.
I saw that. That's such a great title. That's so funny.
And it was loosely adapted from Bram Stoker's 1903 novel, The Jewel of the Seven Stars. So that's kind of interesting as well. This is our first female mummy. But it won't be the last. Thank you, Tom Cruise. And whoever played... Who played...
Sophia Boutella.
Yeah, there you go. This movie is the most 1971 movie I've ever seen. It's so hilariously early 70s. It's more...
How many 1971 movies have you seen?
Yeah, I don't know about 71 specifically, but the 70s era, early 70s. It's more flamboyant, it's more gory, and Richard, it is far more sexual. This is the horniest mummy movie, and that includes the bisexual awakening that is The Mummy, 1999. This movie is so dripping with sex.
Yeah. Fun fact, another 1971 movie, which you may or may not think is more and less 1971, but Escape from the Planet of the Apes.
I would say they're definitely competing for the same prize. Yeah.
What else have we got? Diamonds Are Forever.
Yep.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Clockwork Orange.
There you go.
It's a few good movies here.
But like, even like, there are shades of a Clockwork Orange in Blood from the Mummy's Tomb. There's this creepy kinkiness to it, but it's the type of kinkiness like your grandparents were into.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nudity in this one. You know, like it's disgusting, frankly. According to IMDb, in an interview, Valerie Leon, who plays the very buxom
lead roles,
she once talked about her refusal to do nude scenes in this and other films, upsetting Hammer producers. Quote, "I did three movies where everyone was naked except for me. I kept my clothes on, which was quite bizarre. I lost a lot of work by not disrobing completely. I think it was shyness. I built a wall around myself and became unapproachable. It was the only anywhere I knew how to handle my lack of confidence. Hammer executives were dismayed with Leon. She said, I refused to show too much in any of the publicity shots that I did. I was a disaster on the Hammer glamour queen front because I didn't bear all. I've always believed suggestion is more erotic than showing everything anyway. And it's like, you're right. Like, fuck those producers for making you uncomfortable and clearly making you like feel like you need to blame yourself for your lack of confidence, right? Like, it is more erotic to suggest than show. Yeah. You know, look at the Mummy 1999.
she's been a Bond girl as well.
Who was she?
She's in Never Say Never Again, but she was also in The Spy Who Loved Me. But according to Wikipedia, dumb Wikipedia trivia, Leon is the only actress to have appeared in four of the most popular film series, having starred in the Carry On, James Bond, Hammer Horror, and Pink Panther franchises.
The big four! The big four, they call them!
Yeah. But it's also, she's the only actress to have appeared in four of the most popular film series. It's like... So, like, you pick any four franchises and be like,
none of these star one
Zoe,
actor.
Zoe Saldana's been in them.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she's been in Marvel, Star Trek, Avatar. I'm sure she's been in at least one more. And you'd be like, yeah, cool. Avatar's not.
And we actually can't figure it out. We can't think of a fourth one that Zoe Saldana's been in. We're like, oh my God. It is just Valerie Leon. Peter Cushing was cast in this film and completed one day's filming before leaving the production after his wife was diagnosed with emphysema. That'll do it. And director Seth Holt, remember how I said he only directed part of it and was unofficial? What do you think happened to him?
I'm devastated to report. I accidentally found this out already, and I was like, fuck, that would have been such a good reveal, and I've ruined that for
That's right, he was cancelled from life. He died 5 weeks into a six-week shoot of a heart attack. It says, according to Wikipedia, collapsing into cast member Aubrey Morris's arms and dying on set.
That's fucking mental. That's insane.
Craziest thing that's ever happened.
That's the most interesting thing. Yeah, like we've ever seen. Pirates of the Caribbean. It's always had Anders in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Very nice. Very cool. Very good. Michael Carreras directed the final week's filming, and for some reason Wikipedia thinks it's necessary to mention that Michael Carreras said Holt's footage did not cut together. Yeah, he's dead.
Take him while he's down.
And fuck him. Yeah. Richard, I can't believe I'm saying this, but with at least 10 minutes to go, we're at the end of the podcast. I feel bad. I feel like we...
I feel great.
So we have to continue the franchise. Do you have a good continue the franchise?
I have a joke title I came up with when I saw the titles of these ones.
What's your title?
So based on Blood from the Mummy's Tomb, I thought of Pee from the Mummy's Balls.
Thank you. My one is called... Battle Royale Undead Mummy All Out Attack, which is a team up film where Imhotep, Karis, Claris, Ra Untef, Prem, and Queen Terra all fight each other. And sure, throw Jet Li in there, throw Sophia Batala, is that her name, in there?
Is Jet Li a mummy?
Yes, he's in the Mummy Tomb of the Dragon Empire.
Right, because fucking throw Jackie Chan in there.
Throw Bruce Lee. Get Bruce Lee.
I was looking at Hammer Horror is technically still around, and like their recent films are like Let Me In, The Resident, Woman in Black, The Quiet Ones, and The Lodge, and I don't know. Again, do I just want to see a smart version of these films, yeah, I'm so disappointed.
Well, Richard, we're up to a little segment of the show. Cool. Sorry, did you want me to keep talking about that?
I know. I feel like Pee from the Mummy's Balls is like not a good enough continue the franchise, and I feel like I did come up with one at some point, but I can't remember.
Do you want to take my one about being on a boat? The Mummy at Sea? I think more horror movies need sequels set on a boat.
Yeah. I reckon Mummy Takes Manhattan.
All right, ranked at franchise, Richard, over on letterboxd.com/coldpops. We have a list of every franchise we've ever done, and it's time to rank the Mummy Hammer series. So we have done 129 franchises, including this one. Where do you think we should rate The Mummy 1959? We've rated The Mummy Universal films at 123, above Divergent and below Revenge of the Nerds. So let's start there. Is this better than The Mummy Universal movies?
Sure.
I think it is. I think
you said this about the Shroud, but I also thought that while it's like the horniest and it, like, it actually and I should have said this all the time, but the Blood from the Mummy's Tomb actually really reminded me of Fright Night 2. That's Fright Night 2, The New Blood, which is like, and even though we didn't like that film, that's the most recent one, which was a sequel to the 2011 one. It's kind of just like a horny reboot. Mm. And it's like you just make the creature real hot. And it was that kind of thing. But then like the familiarity of that and the kind of like, I've seen this idea done terribly before, and this is kind of just like a, and especially with that ending, it's like this is a kind of an interesting take on it. But it's also like, yeah, there are genuine interesting moments of filmmaking in it as well, like you said, the Lynchian intro, and that's kind of what drew me to that last one, and also the fact it was real horny.
It already sounds like we're thinking it's better than The Mummy 1932 then. At the very least, Richard, it's hornier. Mm. So I think I'd probably rather watch these than watch Revenge of the Nerds. And I Know What You Did Last Summer as well.
Mm.
I don't. The next one up at 120 is 300, which I don't think. It's probably not better than 300.
No, especially if we're talking like horniness. 300 Rise of the Mini Empire.
I'm going to place it there then. Below 300 and above, I Know What You Did Last Summer at 121. Does that sound good? All right. And other than that, what are we doing next week, Richard?
We're going to be covering The Mummy, and I know what you're thinking.
So next week we're going to be doing The Mummy 1999, The Mummy Returns 2001, and The Mummy Tomb of the Dragon Empire 2008. And then The Mummy 2017. We're going to throw that in because
I keep forgetting how to watch that one.
There's nowhere else to put that one, unfortunately. And we'll talk about what it looks like when you get this idea good, I think, and then promptly ruin it with its sequels. And then what it looks like when you get it wrong as well. The Modern Mummy Movies. Film franchise Fortnite's Modern Mummy Movies. So that'll be in next week's episode. If you enjoyed this week's episode, please consider liking us on Facebook, following us on Instagram or Twitter. You can subscribe to the Cult Popshire YouTube channel where we do little video essays, and you can also subscribe to Cult Popshire Again, which is where we post the podcast. So you might be listening to that here already. You can join our Discord. Tell us what you thought of this episode. You can do that by joining the Discord. There's a link in the show notes, as well as a Patreon if you want to support us financially. You're welcome to do so. That's over at patreon.com/cultpopshire, where, Richard, for as little as a dollar, mate, you can tell us which films we should watch. You could have stopped this whole fucking charade if you just paid a dollar.
Yeah.
So that's over on Patreon. But speaking of Patreon, stay tuned for the post-credit scene that'll happen after this music plays. Richard, are you feeling emotional knowing that you will almost definitely never see these movies again in the rest of your life?
No, I'm not confident to.
You never know. Life's a long time.
Yeah.
Alrighty, everybody. I wish I knew any Egyptian.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, and welcome everybody to the post-credit scene. This is a scene, a segment even, where at the end of each episode, after the music stops, you get to give us something to talk about if you donate to our Patreon, either $5 or more than $5 a month. If you do
those
that,
are your two options.
Yep, you get to give us something to talk about in this, the post-credit scene. Richard, lay it on me. Who's it from and what is it?
All right, there's another one. Comes to us from Sarah Velling, who sent in a bunch of questions at once, which, as we always say, you're more than welcome to do.
Please do.
And Sarah asks a question I feel like we've answered before, but I'm going to do it anyway. Would you rather make a film that, while being a blockbuster, is very negativity received by critics, or an amazing yet modest film that you will never see become successful in your lifetime?
I feel like I've been asked this question 1,000 times, all by different people. You know, on and off podcast. But I'm going to do a reverse Uno card and say, joke's on you. I don't even want to make a fucking movie.
Really?
No, that's not true. So what are the options? Make a blockbuster that's...
it's very negatively received
or
by critics.
Or make a positively received film.
Amazing yet modest film that you will never see become successful in your lifetime.
That one.
Yeah, it's that
feels
one.
Like it would still lead to more work. And you're
exactly.
That's
the thing. That is actually the thing that it feels like you would still have a better career with that.
Who's seen fucking Safety Not Guaranteed? That guy made Jurassic World. You don't need to make...
I've seen it.
Well, so have I, but... Do you have anything else to add?
I thought that's how we usually end the post-credit scenes. You kind of just laughing and it trails off.
Okay, should we end it there then?
Well, yeah, we could just end it here.
Okay.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.